Blog Talk Radio.
Time is 8:03. You're listening to No Covers on Blog Talk Radio, 858-947-6607. Press 1 to talk to the host. Chat room is now open on No Covers. It is Monday, June the 4th, 2012. We're still here. We haven't gone anywhere yet. Nor do we plan to leave. Liberation Day today, Black History. We'll switch up for a second. Bob, one of those liberation moves this morning. Very special day today in history. We're going to celebrate that. We're going to switch the music up a little bit. This is a record by Steel Pulse, and it's called Uncle George. I'm going to give you a little Black history today. Morning, a day in Black history. I want you to remember the name George Jackson. once you go study the name George Jackson. His brother is very dear to me. Always have been. We call them the Soledad Brothers, George and Jonathan Jackson, in the reggae music and Marcus Garvey movement. And that roots, we call it a roots culture. George and Jonathan Jackson are considered heroes of the party. Let me give you a little history. George Jackson robbed a gas station for $17. I'm going to say this again. George Jackson robbed a gas station for $17. He was sentenced to 1 year to life during that time period for his robbery. Because he robbed with a gun. 1 year to life. That 1 year meaning if he did on good behavior, he'd be out. And then they would just continue to add it on and add it on. George Jackson never seen the light of day again. He died in prison. George Jackson started to write. Once in prison, he became knowledge of self. And he started to write several books. One of them, his classic, Blood in My Eye. The other one is Soledad Brothers. That's the letters that he wrote from Soledad Prison. Constantly, he would write his 17-year-old brother, who was Jonathan Jackson. And so Jonathan, being entrenched in this history, became a Panther, and a lot of people recognize Huey Newton as the leader of the Panthers, which he was. But the first political prisoner of the Panthers was George Jackson. And Jonathan loved his brother. And in love for his brother, Jonathan staged a riot on a courtroom where he took a judge and several witnesses hostage, and he armed several convicts and tried to escape. The government at that time under Hoover was so aimed at making sure the Panthers didn't get a victory that as they were leaving the courtroom, they opened fire. They killed Jonathan. They killed the two convicts. They killed the judge, the prosecutor, and one of the witnesses. No one was going to leave that day. And so we talk about George and Jonathan. Now, the unsung hero of this whole story was a lady by the name of Angela Davis. Angela Davis was the political brains behind the Panther Party. And Angela Davis, you might see as this black woman with this afro, with the fist held in hair. You hear sometimes on No Talk, Blog Talk Radio, on No Covers, because we share Angela Davis' story. She's out of California now, teaching on the prison system. One of the world scholars on the prison system. But Angela Davis was charged with arming and giving the guns to Jonathan Jackson. Because of her involvement in that case, Angela Davis became a fugitive. And when you look at that picture with that black sister with her arm thrown up, that's the fugitive poster that they use to circulate around the country to look for that sister. The day, June the 4th, 1973, she was acquitted on all charges. And she is the one surviving member of the Soledad Brothers, George and Jonathan Jackson. If you ever hear her speak, she always pays tribute when she opens to George and Jonathan Jackson, the Soledad Brothers. Just black history for you. They go research it. And study Sister Angela Davis and check out. Very powerful sister. She's out of California right now teaching, and her main baby is the federal prison system. She teaches on how we have to break that system. A lot of the stuff you hear from No Covers, you get from Angela Davis on the Federal Reserve System. I'd like to welcome everybody to the air this morning. Excuse my voice, a little raspy today. I've got to get some rest, but I got to keep this going. We promise we will come to the air every day. We promise we will make this an open forum every day. So if you want to talk to the host today and take some of this pressure off me, press 1-858-947-6607. In the meantime, we're going to keep it going and keep talking about issues that affect white, blacks and whites, but especially blacks here in the hands of North America. George Zimmerman case bail is being pulled today, Seemed like he had more money than he thought he had. We knew that from the get go. That wasn't nothing new. Anybody raised $2 million on a website in less than a few hours got money. So the fact that he didn't have no money, that was yet to be disclosed. He had money all the while. They knew it. Now they got to pull the bell today. It's going to be interesting to see what the judge do, because a lot of folks wanted the bell pulled the first time. That case is getting watered down and watered down. We're going to try to keep up with it as much as possible and get as much news out of that case as we can. But it's being watered as we speak. Had an interesting week this week. If you go to the Bloods blog site, we had a Stop the Violence tour. Supported the Brothers. Nation of Islam supported and had a Stop the Violence tour in Houston. More interesting take from that. I have an interesting take that I'll share with you this morning. And that is the reasoning for the topic. The topic today, if you notice on the blog site, was, is there hope for America? And not Black America, America. And what became obvious and what is obvious is that America's hope is tied into Black America's hope. So when you ask, is there hope for America, if you see Black America as hopeless and without hope, then there is no hope for America. And that is what the equation is. That's simply what it's come to. You cannot have 20 million or 30 million Black people, 36 million Black people, what's the population now, of Black people that have become hopeless. I don't care how small a minority you may be in this country. If that population has become hopeless and don't see a way out, then America is doomed. Any country will be doomed. They have that masses of a population hopeless, and you're still left as a country to try to provide food, shelter, and clothing for that mass. We're not talking about that 10% again that we always talk about on the show, striving at 10%, because America is so quick to point out to the 10% of Blacks that it becomes successful and moved on. We're talking about the masses of Black people and the masses of people in America, period. That's why the hope is hand in hand, living from paycheck to paycheck, week to week, trying to make it. That's the masses of America's vision and hope, basically making ends meet. That is the masses of what America is doing. I'm talking about even with the ones that went to Yale and Harvard. America is a doomed situation. And the reason why, it can be clearly seen. She has given up on a whole population, a whole race of people America has given up on. And as we talked last week in the with the criminal justice system, not only as the felons have been reduced to the third-class citizenship, the people and the communities that those felons come from have been reduced to third-class citizenship. Certain behaviors have become acceptable and not challenged because the folks in those communities have just taken them as acceptable behavior. We have taken it as acceptable behavior. So what has become clear, and I will challenge most of the scholars to take a few minutes. Good morning, sir. I see you in the chat room this morning. You have to say, I know you have something to say, so go ahead, bring it. I see you in there. How you doing this morning? Glad to see you back. But if we can just take for a moment and look at our community, let's take a simple drive. What I saw is that there is hope. Most of the folks that are living in housing, let's take for housing, for instance, because let's deal with what we saw on the Stop the Violence tour. Most of the folks that are living and dealing with housing situations, I would bet you $1 million or your money that the majority of them, really, if you gave them something better, they would live there. You may say, well, would they take care of it? Would they have the means? Would they have they had the training? Or have certain behaviors become acceptable and we've allowed it? working with children every day within the school system, working with children every day within the neighborhood, certain behaviors that where I grew up, you would get busted in your lip for, are acceptable. Children talk to adults as if they're grown and have no problem with it. So if I know that if I'm 48, a black male, and I walk up to a young little man or young sister in the neighborhood, and I correct them on something, and they give me lip, I know what they're giving a 24 or 25-year-old white female in the school. I already know. I don't have to be in there to know. I know if I'm 48 and they giving me smack, they giving her hell. It, because it become acceptable behavior. I know if I can tell them to pull their pants up, young brother, and pull your pants up, man, or man, do this. And I'm getting to look like who you talking to. I know what the principal sitting in the school is getting. It's become acceptable behavior. The problem is I have to go in both categories. We as black and America as a whole wake up in the morning and act like it has just arrived. It's just, okay, we have this condition and it just got here. It didn't just get here. It didn't just arrive. I picked up a book this morning on my way out. I go to my bookshelf a lot of days, and I pick up a book called The Negro Pilgrimage in America. And I remember, this book sold for 75 cents back in the 60s. Little pocketbook, and it dealt with the Negro expansion in America. Let me tell you where you first made a mistake at America. Because I'm the last of your experiment, and your experiment has failed. I'm just going to make it plain to you this morning. I'm the last of your experiment. I was one of the last ones to integrate into your school system, and your experiment has failed. I'm looking at this book, The Negro Pilgrimage to America, and it's old. I've read it several times, but it's a little pocketbook. I like to go to the bookstore and pick them up. It can remind me of the day that we had Bantam Books. Out that was printing black news and black commentary. And it was selling in America because people were carrying them in their pocket. And they were really reading about their history. I remember the days when black fists and the black, you remember, anybody remember the pick with the Afro comb and the black fists on it? Can't find those too many more. Where black culture was something to be celebrated. Where black history was something that was celebrated, not just on February, but all during the year. Here is where you made your mistake. You made your mistake when you got rid of teaching and educated black children about themselves. Simple as that. You've reduced three generations now of children that have graduated, gone on to college, skipped the African Studies department, when he got a degree in psychology, biology, chemistry, and can't even tell you who Charles Drew is, have the slightest idea who Lewis Latimer is, get stuck on Marcus Garvey, to tell you the truth. I mean, these are common. This is Black History 101. If you're listening and don't know the names I just giving you, go look them up, white or black. See, the problem is when you don't know those names, when someone says, who was Lewis Latimer, and you don't know, and you're looking at light bulbs all day long, when you don't know who Charles Drew is, and every corner in the hood have a plasma plant that's drawing blood off of his invention that's saving your life if you go to the hospital, if you don't know who Marcus Garvey is, white or black, you are doing yourself a failure and a disservice. Because I'd be damned, you taught me who Abraham Lincoln was and Thomas Jefferson and George Washington. That's why I know about you. That's why I know who you are. But you don't know who I am. So you look at me as if as I'm nothing. And blacks look at themselves as if they're nothing because they don't know who they are. So the biggest mistake America made was when they took these little books off the shelf, like The Negro Pilgrimage in America, the Bantam books, the books Native Son, which talks about bigotry.
when James Baldwin was writing The Fire Next Time. These were your 70s and 60s. These were what we call the Black Renaissance. Why you think they called it the Black Renaissance? The Black Renaissance, they call it that because it reminds them of the Renaissance in Europe. Now, what happened? Listen to the term Renaissance. The Renaissance in Europe, it was the Age of Enlightenment. What happened? Europeans for years were in the cave days. Europeans used to live with their animals. That's how cave-like they were. White people. The Queen Elizabeth used to live with her dog, her sheep, her cattle. They used to be right there in the house with them, in the castle with them. They were in the age of darkness. They didn't have public toilets. The pneumonic plague, that's where it came from. They wasn't sanitary. They had no street lights. What happened? What happened was they went over into the Islamic territories and sacked the libraries of Alexandria, sacked the libraries, and brought the books and the knowledge back home. When they brought the knowledge back to Europe, that knowledge from Averroes, who taught them how about medicine, that knowledge from the Moors that taught them about the high sciences, knowledge that had been taken out of Africa years ago, when that knowledge was spread, Europe had the Age of Enlightenment, which was the Renaissance, the age of the period of culture, expression, of art. Where did they get it from? They got it from those crusades. And when they sacked those libraries, they brought the information back home. Now, what happened in the Harlem Renaissance? The Harlem Renaissance during the early 30s, 40s, 50s, what happened? After slavery, now blacks begin to read and go back in to study their history. So you had people like James Baldwin, Langston Hughes, those Richard Wright, those authors that were going back and bringing up fictional stories and bringing up autobiographies of people that we hadn't heard of before. And what does it cause? When you teach a child that there's something other than Shaquille O'Neal and Kobe Bryant, it changes their attitude on who they are. But if you only tell me all I can be is a basketball player or a movie star, and I look and see I really don't have the talent for that, you don't teach me about being a decent human being that has any credit or any worth, then what happens? I begin to feel worthless. And when a person feels worthless, his community looks worthless. When he wakes up and his community looks worthless, he feels more worthless. He begins to behave worthless. So he begins to engage in activities because he sees no self-worth in himself. That's what America has done, and America doesn't want to face the fact. You give me a black president now and say, be happy, you be happy, because I'm not happy. When I see the masses of my people looking the way they are, I'm not happy. I'm not happy at all. No, they came out of enlightenment with Renaissance. The Harlem Renaissance brought them out, and what happened? We went right back into darkness because every time we got a way to get out, you find a way to shut us down again. You started teaching the education in the school system. You watered it down. You've watered it down so much that it's not even pure education anymore. Your children don't even benefit from the education. And what has happened is, sadly or not, America is slowly dying. Am I preaching death of America? Yes, because I see it. I see America dying every day. You see America dying every day. Just don't know how to stop it. Told a white friend of mine recently, I told him, I said, we both agree on everything. We agree on 99% of everything. He agrees. Man, you know what? Everything you say, that was almost, you know, is correct. It's just that, man, I wish you would try to help save it. You trying to save it, I'm trying to destroy it. That's the 1% we disagree on. Save it for what? So we can continue to be second and third class citizens? Well, I want to save a country that the masses of my people, all I have to do is shine a little bit, kiss a little bit, and then I can move up. I don't want to do that. That's not who I am. I want all our people to be free. So why would I try to save a country that at the end of the day is just going to reduce us right back? At the end of the day, my children are still going to have second-class citizenship unless they do certain things, behave a certain way. No. I want my son to be able, if he wants to do his locks, do his locks. And you accept him for who he is, not accept him as somebody that you've seen rob a bank with locks. Because I've seen a lot of white guys rob banks with locks, with hair, straight hair. I didn't blame you. I don't walk up to you and say, okay, you're going to rob a bank. You know, that's just where we at. Got a lot of work to do, but I do see hope. I do see hope in the fact that it will change, but I believe it's going to get worse before it changes. It needs to get worse. You might remember the gas shortages of the 70s where you had to get gas based on your name, last name. Man, Volterbite, is that, if I'm, am I pronouncing that right, Volterbite. I'm talking to someone in the chat room right now. I want to make sure I get your name right. Is it Volterbite? And text me and let me know if that's correct. And what does that mean? It sounds like a Darth Vader term or something. I see you talking about the new modern play. I had to go to the chat room sometime and just ask a question. And I'm just trying to find out what this whole. Well, give me a, tell me what that means, Volk. Volk, because I mean, we talking this morning, and I just want to know what the name is. Volterbite. Is that a nickname? And I know that you tune in a lot, and I'm glad you tune in because I know that means you're telling other people because I see the chat room picks up. But you're not typing now, so I guess I'll let that one go. I just want to know what the name is. It comes up all the time. And I just want to know. I don't know you. We'd like to know you. Sit down and have coffee someday because we do have a good conversation here on Blog Talk Radio, No Covers. Y'all that's listening, we got an evening show going to start in a couple of weeks. I'm going to make that announcement today. And I'm cutting the show early. If you can hear my voice, it's had it. I am a little weary today. Take care of your health. Ropo Sharp. Okay, I like that. Ah, I like that. Okay. All right, cool. Now I know. Now I know. Sharp with it. Okay, I got you. Let's talk to my man. Take care of your health. I put a blog out on Saturday, I think it was. Saturday I talked about health, and I put a blog out about sarcoid. And I put the sarcoid out because I saw my sarcoid starting to flare back up again. As I told people, I've been openly with it. I battled a disease called sarcoidosis for many years. I've had it now probably approximately 14 years, and I battled it without medication. I battled it without taking the prednisone. I looked at the side effects of what prednisone does to you, and the prednisone kills you quicker than the disease kills you. So my brother and I both have it, and we both test studies because I'm watching his. I'm watching what he does through his, and I'm watching what he does with mine. We're basically trying to figure out who's going to live the longest. I got rid of the prednisone because of the side effects from it. It's a vesicular steroid, and the steroids will tear your system down muscular, and it tears your system down bone. But sarcoid affects your bones first. Knowing that, I got rid of it. My brother weighs probably about double or triple my size, probably double my size, probably about two or three, way bigger than me. He works out a lot, has to work out, has to go to gym, and I'm not really a gym person. So taking that kind of medication, you really have to work out because that gets you real bloated, and you just end up like a big fat wad of whoosh. And that's not what I wanted to be. And I also read an article, I read a book a while back called Dead Doctors Don't Lie. And what I found out is most doctors will not take what they prescribe. I'm going to say that again. Most doctors, if you ask them off record, they will not take the medication that they prescribe. So why would I want to take something to somebody else that prescribing it won't even take themselves? You's a doctor. And if I go in your doctor, if you don't, I mean, you don't believe me, okay, ask, go check me. You say, well, okay, you just said something very stupid. No, I didn't. Go to your doctor next time And when he prescribes the medication, ask him, would you take it? Honestly. Just ask him, honestly, would you take it? And see what his response be. See what his response is going to be. More likely it's going to be surprised that you asked the question. And if he's an honest doctor, he's going to tell you he does not use any of the regimens that he prescribes because he understands the pharmaceutical business is a big business. When they spend 10 to 12 years testing a drug to get it to the market, believe me, once they get it to the market, they have spent so much money trying to get this drug to the market that they're going to push it as hard as possible to make sure you get it and make sure the doctors prescribe it. You see people with 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 12 pill bottles on their nightstand. I refuse to have a pill bottle on my nightstand. If it's die, if I die, it's going to be because I just didn't do what I'm supposed to do. I don't believe God, who created us in his own image, created us and then turned the pill bottle over next. I'm just not going to believe it. I believe he gave me all the natural remedies that I have available. I believe if I follow his dietary laws correctly, then I won't get sick. I believe that most of my sickness that I have came from my behaviors that I know better. And everybody, it comes from behaviors that you go back and look at the stress you put on yourself when you were younger. Go back and look on the things that you did when you were younger. That's why I'm so, people ask, why you work so much with young people and you so hard on young people? Because I don't want them to have the stress and pain that I've got now because they can check it now. If I go back and look at all the crazy stuff I've done, I should be dead. And I'm just talking about my brief window because I only had like a 4-year period from like 18 to 20 something there. But some of us been doing this thing, man. Some of us been out there acting foolish since 18 on and still acting foolish today. And I'm wondering how you still walking around. So check your health. Go back and get this week's health scenario. When I come back tomorrow, I want to continue on, is there hope? I threw that out there. There's a couple issues I want to talk about. And I want to talk about black leadership this week. I'm going somewhere with this. This is Monday morning, so I usually set the stage for the rest of the week. You all that's tuning in, I want to deal with black leadership, especially this week, and how to pick good black leadership. I think we've dealt with that before. But I want to talk about black leadership because I don't think they get a fair shake. I think they get lumped into one bubble, and we think it's going to be one leader for everybody. And everybody don't like blue. My favorite colors are really earth tone colors. I'm not a blue or gray person. I'm an earth tone person. So what's for me is for me. What's for somebody else is for somebody else. But we're going to deal with that this week and discuss the leadership. Because black leadership, to me, is at a dead-end road. I mean, it's actually at a dead-end road. I can only tell one leader, and I'm going to say that, that there is one leader that I trust. And that is the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan, because he showed me he's not at a dead-end road. The leadership as a whole, to me, is at a dead-end road, and that's why we're in trouble. Because those of us that have been awakened by a particular leadership, those of us that have a knowledge of self are doing nothing. We're sitting on the sidelines, and we're not moving aggressively enough to become the new leadership. Because we're following behind one, most of us. And that one has led. But it was the lead that was supposed to open up and spread. Sharpton's sons are not around. Jackson's family is not around. Dr. King's family, you don't hear any of them. Those are your top. You know, we have Michael Vazin, Eric Dyson, Cornel West. We have those guys out there, but they're not leading. The marching days are over. Let's make that clear. The days of marching are over, so we got to find a new kind of leadership. We're using Blog Talk Radio to find new young people, to wake them up. So in saying that, I want you to check out a new show that's coming out on Tuesdays and Thursdays, Tuesday evening at 8 o'clock. I'll be sending you the post on that, because we're going down to the trenches to go get some of our young people. We will still remain here every morning at 8 o'clock. And one thing I noticed, I got to start sending the blog out every morning. If I don't send the blog out, a lot of folks get busy. So I'll do that and make sure I do that tomorrow morning. Man, what is you talking about? Real, you right. Boy, I'm talking about my man again. The Sharp. I like to use the word Sharp. War is not cutting it anymore. And you're right. It's not cutting it anymore, but guess what? We still haven't learned how to get along together. I love your comments, man. I love your comments. And I have to address them as you comment on them. I love what you said. Because I understand where you're coming from. You said race war is not cutting it anymore. I'm with you. Okay. All right, check this out. You said we don't need men to. And I'm taking it from that. You're saying race war is not cutting anymore. We need to get along and get along together. All right, I'm going to give you the benefit of the doubt. I'm going to give you the benefit of the doubt that you're in a percentile. I don't know you, but I'm going to give you the benefit of the doubt that you're in a percentile of whites that want to live peacefully together with blacks. My question is, what you going to do with the other 50%? You will tell me put my gun up, which is my mouth. That's my gun. You're going to tell me put my neutron bomb with my mouth up. So you say, okay, race war is not cutting anymore. Okay, so when I come over to your dinner table, I'm going to walk over to your dinner table knowing that 50% of your people still can't stand me. You're going to tell me going to put my gun up. I can't put my gun up because you haven't dealt with your 50% yet. Once you deal with your 50% who don't like me, I don't mind coming over your dinner table. Once Rush Limbaugh gets off the air, I don't mind coming. Once Fox News stop being so racist, I'll come over and sit down peacefully with you. Once the Klan put their sheets back up that I know they still privately have, I will come and sit down and we cool. But until that happens, you can't expect me to get up off my soapbox. You can't expect me to put my gun away. As long as when I walk into that bank, I tell you what, then you meet me down at the bank today and co-sign for me and make sure I get this house loan. As long as you're not going, are you going to give up your 400-year head start on me? I've only been out here 100 years. You've had a 400-year head start. You want me to turn around and put my stick away when your 400-year head start, you may be willing to give yours up. I'm going to give you that benefit of the doubt since you call in on the show. I'm going to give you that benefit of the doubt. But your masses, your people that rode their jet skis down at Riceville Beach this weekend is not giving that up. They're not giving up their nice, comfortable homes to make this an equal playing field. You're not ready for socialism, and you're not going to have it because that's the only thing going to make it equal because you're not willing to give up that 400-year head start. You're not even willing to acknowledge that you've had a 400-year head start, and you want me to give my stick up. No, I won't give my stick up, not until you give yours up, because my stick, I might need to whoop you upside your head. So I got to keep my stick. I may come to your dinner table and sit there and start eating dinner with you, knowing you got the other 50% in the cut that don't want me at the table. And all of a sudden, as soon as I start eating, all of a sudden you open the door and your imps come out. I might need my stick to whip you and their ass. So no, I'm not giving up my stick. I give up my stick when you go over there in your community, when you go over there in white America. And even if you know what? I don't even know if you're white or black, but even if you're black, when you go over there in your conservative community, because I'm over there too, and get them, I let people know I am a registered Republican. I got blacks that don't like it. Why? I need to know what the hell is going on. I sit right in the room with him talk, and they want me to be Mr. Charlie and smile and step and fetch it. I sit right in the room and know what they say about my folks when we gone. And if I laughed at that little joke with them, they're, oh, he's a good one. Come on board. So as long as that 50% still, and why do I say it's 50%? Because every time y'all draw an election, it come closer and closer, red and blue. It get closer and closer. Your house is just divided as it was when Lincoln was here. I'm going to say that again. That house is just as divided as it was when Lincoln was here. It hadn't changed. When John Brown raided Harper's Ferry, y'all was the ones that lynched John Brown. So don't come over here telling me to give up my stick. I might need that stick to whoop your ass.
You say that you're watching me on the telly. Ain't me go nowhere. Your name is Big Brother. You say that you're tired of me protesting. Children dying every day. My name is nobody, but I can't wait to see your face inside the door. Oh. Your name is Big Brother. You say that you got me all in the muzzle. Writing it down every day. Your name is off. Your name is Cecilia. I'll change if you vote me into the train.
To you, you cause your own country to fall.